morning. My name is Karen Forbes. I'm the Executive Director at the Legal Aid Society of Story County, just across the street. I walked over here. What we do is we represent Story County residents whose income is at or below 150% of the federal poverty guidelines for their family size in civil non-fee generating legal cases. So for a single individual, to put that in perspective, that person would make about $18,700 a year. For a family of four, that's about $38,600 a year. By civil non-fee generating, that means we don't do court-appointed cases. Those are juvenile cases, criminal cases, anything somebody could get a court-appointed attorney for. And we don't generally sue people for money, because you can get an attorney, a private attorney, willing to help you with that. The exception that we do make is Social Security disability cases. We do those. We don't pick and choose who gets in on Social Security disability cases like private attorneys do. We don't take a fee for those. So the 100%, if they are able to get Social Security, goes to our client. Other cases we do take, most of our cases are family law. So that is about 50% of our cases are family law. That's divorces, child custody, help enforcing through defense, through contempt actions, things like that. We do civil protective orders, so domestic protective orders. Elder abuse is one, sexual abuse, any sort of civil protective order. We do landlord-tenant cases. We help a lot of people defend eviction actions. We establish guardianships, we draft civil wills, like I said, Social Security disability. We do some unemployment insurance appeals, and some debtor-creditor types of cases. We help people with those. We do not do bankruptcies, but we can help people who are insolvent otherwise. So we are not Iowa Legal Aid. A lot of people confuse us and they think that we are part of Iowa Legal Aid. We are a small local office. We have three attorneys, including myself. We run about 200 to 250 cases per year total. So we don't get any federal funding like Iowa Legal Aid. Our funding is about 95% local, and except for a little bit of specific grants that we ask for specific projects, we are nearly 100% locally funded within the state of Iowa. We don't provide legal hotline type of help or do yourself packets. There are other resources for that. What we provide is a full service model of representation for the residents of Story County who can't get an attorney otherwise. So a client that comes into our office can expect to receive the same kind of representation that he or she would get in a private law firm. There are other services, like I said, that provide just a question type legal advice services, legal hotlines. We fill in the gap. And we firmly believe that our ability to continue to offer the full service model of representation to as many clients as we can is because we are able to be a local separate entity from Iowa Legal Aid. Another way we are different, we don't really staff cases prior to deciding whether or not we're going to take a case. With very rare and very few exceptions, if an individual meets our income guidelines and our residency guidelines, and they have a legal problem that we can help with, and we don't have a conflict of interest according to our ethical rules in taking the case, we will represent that person. So we don't look for any other things that, you know, oh, we'll take this case and we won't take that case. If they're qualified, we take them, and we fully believe that everybody should have access to the judiciary system in that way. Our typical client, if somebody that comes in, 74% of our clients are female. Most of our clients, 70%, are between the ages of 40 and 64 years old. Most of our clients are at or below 100% of the federal poverty guidelines. That's 81% of them are below that. 51% self-report as having a diagnosed mental illness. Most of them, like I said, 50% have a family law related legal problem. And of course, with the population, most of our clients live in AIMS. About 50% live in AIMS. Some changes that we have made recently. Prior to about mid-year last year, our income cap for getting direct service through the office was 125% of the federal poverty guidelines. And then we have a VLP service, a volunteer lawyer project service, where we try to actively place people that are just above our guidelines with private attorneys in the community. And that increased from 150 to 175%, and we increased our deadlines to 150%. We did this provisionally in April of 2018, and the reason why we did that is because we really felt like we weren't keeping statistics at the time as to why we were turning people away, but it really felt like we were turning way more people away than usual that were just over our income guidelines. And our wait list was non-existent for several months. We had about a 2-week wait list, which is really no wait list. It's how long it takes to get it to see an attorney. And we consider about 4 to 6 weeks a healthy wait list. So that was way down. And then United Way came out with their ALICE report and showed that a survival income for somebody living in Story County was about 155% for a single person and 205% for a family. So we were concerned we weren't meeting our demographic. And really, we're trying to help people that can't afford a private attorney and not necessarily meet a specific number of, you know, a specific percentage of the poverty guidelines. And so we decided to increase it provisionally to 150%. So far, that seems to be working. We're able to keep a manageable caseload. Our wait list is back up to about 4 to 6 weeks for service, and it's been like that since we raised it. So that's been great. Our VLP referral program, that's new as of a couple of years ago. Last fiscal year, we had a placement rate with other private attorneys at about 79%. So that's been very successful as well. So things are going well, and we are very extremely grateful for the history of support from the people of Story County. We take pride in providing consistent and reliable high-quality legal representation to the residents of Story County who would otherwise be unable to afford representation, and we applaud the people of Story County for the recognition of the importance that the access to the judiciary system provides for people, and it provides, you know, for their safety, for their security, for their stability, and we thank you for your continued support. Are there any questions?
No, I just have one.
Sure.
So as you've gone up a bit to try and cover who you feel are the demographics for your services, have you noticed any increase in a particular type of legal issue that they're dealing with?
Not really. The numbers of what kinds of issues that people are experiencing are about the same. We're still very much family law, and that is where I think the most need is for this type of legal service. So we're still running at about 50%, and everything seems to be about stable as far as the kind of case that people need help with.
And then how are private
That's actually another change that we have implemented in this office. We have never run a private funding campaign, like a directly through the office, a direct giving program. And we changed that this fiscal year. We finally started working on a direct giving campaign, and it's been pretty successful for our first year. And so we are very much working on trying to secure some more private donations. Thank you for your time.
Good morning. My name is Les White. I am the director of Mary Greeley Home Health, Hospice, and Story County Public Health. I just like wanted to share a little bit about where our service area is. Of course, Ames and Story County is our central location, but we do service people from a 50-mile radius from Ames. So as you look at that circle, we really go up into Iowa Falls. You can come across into Fort Dodge, go down to Jefferson, come up around Des Moines, and then up into Marshalltown, and then back up into Iowa Falls. So we do quite a bit of traveling in relationship to our service area. Our mission is to advance health through specialized care and personal touch, and our vision is to be the best. One of our services is related to the home health. We provide skilled nursing care in the home. So those are where our RN case managers go out into the home. They can provide a variety of services, whether it be related to IV antibiotic administration, if it's related to wound care. We do a lot of medication education and those types of things in the home. Last year, we saw 270 people in Story County, and that really attributed to over 2,300 visits. We also offer therapy services in the home. We have occupational therapy, we have physical therapy, as well as speech therapy. And then the other service that really provides a personal touch is what we call our personal care homemaker service. And with that service is where individuals need some assistance with their personal care, possibly bathing, it could be related to exercise, we may do helping them get dressed and those types of things. Between our personal care homemaker, our therapy, and our skilled nursing, we average about 125 clients that we manage per day with those services. In addition to that, we have our homemaker environmental program, and that's really where we're focusing on. We can go buy groceries for individuals, we can help them clean, we maybe can help prepare some food, or just those little extra things, laundry, that they're not able to do for themselves. Last year in Story County, with our environmental homemaker service, we serviced over 114 individuals. That's our average daily census. As far as total people, we served over 193 individuals. And we do an annual survey with our homemaker clients, and this past year, 95% of them said if it wasn't for our homemaking service, they wouldn't be able to be in their home alone. So it is definitely a very valuable service. It is one of our services, the homemaker service, that we do provide on the sliding fee scale. So we make sure that every individual is able to get the service that needs it. I think another component to that is really the social interaction that our homemaker service provides with those individuals. That really accounts for just as much, really, as doing that physical labor for them. We also have a 24-hour response system. That's our lifeline system. So you see those advertised on TV where it's a push button, and they push it, and then there's somebody that responds to them. Currently, we have about 125 clients that have our lifeline unit. And then our last program related to our home health site is a program that we work with Mary Greeley Medical Center on. It's called Transitional Care and our Surgical Care Program. And what that entails is we provide one free home visit after the individuals are discharged from the hospital. Our focus is really to decrease those readmission rates as well as to decrease the infection rate for those individuals. So as you're looking at transitional care, the individuals that we really focus on, we focus on individuals with congestive heart failure, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, pneumonia, sepsis is another one, and then myocardial infarction. When we're looking at the surgical care, the individuals that we're focusing on here are those that have had colon surgery, back surgery, hip, and knee surgery. We have found that this is a successful program. And when we go out to make those visits, what we're really focusing on, again, is, number one, their medication administration. Do they know how to take their medications, and do they have the right medications in the home? We also focus on, do they have their scheduled physician visit? Our goal is to get them back into the physician within 2 to 3 days, and we make sure they have that visit set up, but also that they have the transportation to that visit. And then we also focus on just kind of do a home safety assessment to make sure that everything in the home is safe for them. So last year in Story County, we provided that service to 407 clients, and it ended up to be about 447 visits. So they're really, it's a nice health promotion that we do. I did want to share, too, that we just recently, Mary Greeley Medical Center was awarded a State Innovation Model Grant, a STEM grant. And with that grant, we chose to look at food insecurity in Story County. And so some of those dollars are going to be directed towards our transitional care program. And for those individuals that we go out to make a visit, we're going to offer them 1 free week's worth of Meals on Wheels. So we're hoping, again, that that will help with their nutrition. It's a great collaboration in Story County, so we are excited about that. In addition to Story County Public Health Services, we have two public health nurses, Sherry Zook as well as Teresa Ferrari. We provide clinics then throughout Story County. When you're looking at our senior health clinics, we're focusing on foot and blood pressure clinics. And in Ames, we provide that at numerous sites. Like Green Hills, Heartland Senior Center, Regency, Stonehaven, Waterford, and Windsor Oak. We also go out into the other communities and provide in their centers like in Colo, Nevada, Huxley, and Story City. And we find that our clinics are always, always full. So it definitely is meeting a need. In addition to senior health clinics, we also provide immunization clinics. So in our office in Ames, we offer regular immunization clinics to individuals. And one thing that's exciting about that for us is we are just completing a remodel. We used to improvise, which we're very good at in home health and public health. And we were actually using our conference room as the room where we were giving our immunizations. We would set that up and do that there. We were able, through Mary Greeley Medical Center, we were able to reorganize our office, and now it's really set up like a real clinic. We're excited. When you come in, you'll meet our individual there sitting at the desk. We'll take the information, and then we were able to redesign our immunization room right there in the front. So rather than take people back through our clinic, that we'll be able to take care of them right there. It's very private. And it'll be everything, computers, the refrigerator, immunizations, everything will be right there. So we're very excited about that. It will actually be all completed by the end of this week. So I encourage people to stop by. We like to show it up. In relationship to immunizations, really, truly, overall, we have seen an increase in the immunization rates in Story County. We went from 63% up into 84%, so that was nice. We did see a 1% decrease this year in the flu immunization rates. Not exactly sure why that did occur, although we have not had any flu outbreaks to report. And sometimes those outbreaks stimulate more people. So that possibly could be one of the reasons. The other thing related to immunizations that our nurses do is they do go out into the preschools and into all the school systems, and they do immunization audits to make sure that all of our children have the proper immunization, and those have been successful as well. In addition to that, disease investigation and surveillance, they're looking at things, tuberculosis, follow up on those kinds of things, E. coli, if there's salmonella, measles, any of those kinds of outbreaks, they do follow up on those as well. Then community education, and we've really tried to expand our community education and public health, and we're trying to use social media a little bit more, and we're able to do that through Mary Greeley's Facebook page. And so we're able to post, as the seasons come around, we post, like we did, information related to the flu and the immunizations related to flu. You know, when summer comes around, we'll talk about proper food handling and those kinds of things. So we're really trying to get more education out that way. This past year, we also did a program with our kids when they came in for their immunizations this summer, as we focus on bicycle safety. And we offered free bicycle helmets as well as free reflectors for the bicycles. So we were able to give those out as well. In relationship to emergency management, we of course have our plan for Story County, but we are part of what they call the Coalition B, which is a group of counties that work together. Our funding goes through them and it's distributed through them. It's a nice way that we can use each other's, how each other does things differently, and we can really benchmark off of different counties. But also we can use their equipment. So if Jasper County has some equipment that maybe Story County would need, we know that and we can access that equipment. So that's kind of a nice thing. The other thing through that group is we're really able to offer more education free of charge, so we're able to take advantage of that as well. Hospice services are also provided through us. We provide skilled nursing services in the home to our hospice clients. For our hospice clients, we average about 26 patients in the home, so not quite as big as our home health site. We also have our Israel Family Hospice House, which again, we always encourage people to stop by. This past year, we have done some remodeling in with some new carpets. Our furniture, I heard, just arrived today. So just trying to do some updates to that. But if you ever have questions or are just interested in stopping by, we encourage you to do so. We also have a bereavement program. And with our bereavement program, we have a new individual. His name is Mike Weiler. We're very excited about Mike. He's very passionate about bereavement and community. So I think we will see him getting out into the community even more than what we have in the past. We're really trying to expand that program to include more pre-bereavement. It used to be that we would only contact the individual after their loved one had passed. And we really felt a little disconnect because they hadn't seen that person before. And now they're contacting you after your loved one has been lost. And although they did it in a very compassionate way, we just felt like maybe we needed to change that up a little bit. So we now might make contact with those families and those individuals prior to death, and then he provides that support once they have passed. And that support goes on for 13 weeks after that individual is lost. We provide support groups through there. We just completed, there was a nice Valentine's luncheon for bereaved folks. We also do a coffee group every quarter where they get together and go through and have education and different things like that. Also, a new program they offered this past year was Cooking for One. That was also very successful. So a lot going on in relationship to our bereavement program. I did want to talk a little bit about some of the changes and the opportunities that we have coming up. In relationship to our 24-hour emergency response system, or our lifeline, what we were finding is that our census in that area was declining. And the reason we feel, we've done some research and talked to some other individuals, is that our system is really becoming outdated. It doesn't give the option of GPS, which a lot of the new systems do. So we are in a contract, and we weren't able to break that contract. So what we did do is we worked with Philips, and they're willing to take over our Lifeline product, and they will give all of our current clients new Lifelines with GPS capabilities and will not raise the price for them, because we have quite a few, again, individuals that is on a sliding fee scale. So we felt that would be a plus for our program to be able to do that for individuals and to get the latest information. Because of that, we did not ask for any funding this year from AFSAT, which has been a big change for us because that has been supported by them in the past. We did not do that because of the change. Something very exciting for us, on Friday, this Friday, 4 days, countdown, we will be transitioning to a new documentation system. We will go into a computerized system called EPIC. This is a system that Mary Greeley Medical Center uses, as well as McFarland Clinic. So we really feel like this is going to enhance that transition of care, and with the health team, of the information that we can share back and forth much easier than we have in the past. So next year, I'll come back and I'll report to you how that's going after Friday. So we also, this year, added hospice music therapy program. It's been very successful. She averages about 20 visits a month. So it has really, really worked out well, and we will continue to enhance that program. Lastly, many of you knew our Chief Nursing Officer, Neil West, retired this past December. And so we have a new Chief Nursing Officer. His name is Corey Jeffries, and he is actually over myself, so over home health, hospice, and Story County Public Health. He's been with us now for 6 weeks. So some challenges we see coming. Reimbursement, we're always out there checking and seeing what's happening. The state has decided to bring back another managed care organization for Medicare, Medicaid, I mean, and MCO. They will be entering in July 2019. Their name is Iowa Total Care, so I hope they hold up to their name. We really now feel like we've got everything managed with the two MCOs that we're working with. So we're hoping that maybe they have learned some things that they will share with this new MCO. As always, our patients don't notice the difference. We continue to provide the care and try to help them. If they are ones that are chosen to go to this new MCO, we'll help them make that transition.
But that new managed care company, do they have a track record that can be
improved? You know what? I'll be honest with you. I haven't done much investigation in relationship to them, but I would hope so. I hope so. So we'll see how this comes out. Public health funding, last year we did receive about $3,500 less than we had the previous year. So we'll see how that goes. With our public health funding, they always hold 3% of our budget until the very end. Last year, they continued to hold the 3%, and that was not distributed. At this point, I have not heard anything in relationship to that 3% or really what's going to be happening the next year with our budget, which I'm a little bit surprised because by this time last year, we kind of knew what was going to go on. So we'll just hang in there and see what happens with that. Staffing, Story County, as you probably all know, has one of the lowest unemployment rates, which is a good thing unless you need to hire some staff. So we continue, Mary really continues to be competitive in relationship to salaries. They do benchmarking. They're in the process of doing that. We try to be creative and come up with new staffing methods and ways of doing things. So we'll continue to do that. As always, we're very fortunate to have the funding from ASPET as well as the support of Mary Greeley Medical Center. We're very proud of our services, and we look forward to serving Story County next year. Do you have any questions?
Public health funding, is that because they
have
the Iowa Department of Public Health?
Correct.
And how much do you receive from?
Yep, we received, it's 200 and, I can tell you exactly because I wrote it. In 2018, we received $206,000, and this year it was $202,707.
They hold back 3%, and usually you get it if you need it.
But last year we did not. Yeah. But I haven't really heard anything this year about what's going on with the state of Iowa's budget and different things like that. And usually they're pretty good about sharing that information with us. We do have tomorrow, we do have a compliance audit with the Iowa Department of Public Health. They come every 2 years to make sure that we're spending our money accordingly, and I'm sure that will be fine. But I'm wondering if maybe Heather will be able to give us some information tomorrow about where that kind of, what's going on with that. For my department, I manage 56 FTEs.
And you report to usually?
My workforce is, right now where I'm finding a little bit more difficulty is like physical therapists. I've had a physical therapy position open since October and haven't been able to fill that. Looking at probably there'll be some new grads coming out here in May. Maybe we'll get an opportunity then. We are looking actually at bringing in a traveler, but rather than just bringing them in, we're actually going through the process of interviewing, and we want to make sure that it's the right fit for our funds.
One more question. Mm-hmm. So the senior house planning, you get hours around the county. How often do you get?
Once a month.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So for your asset funding, the supplemental money, in this last asset round, did you feel that you were able to be adequately funded by the
system? Yes, we always feel that we are. We're very fortunate.
Good morning. I am Jessica Reynolds, Story County Attorney, and joined by Craig Evans. I'd like to thank Craig for his cooperation and collaboration with my office regarding this matter. As the board is aware, my office is proposing an ordinance as a home rule legislative fix to the state versus person case that came out recently. My request to the board would be that you authorize me to get the proposed ordinance for publication to the auditor. I understand that Craig and Linda are tweaking a little bit of the language, and I would say after that's done, that should go through me and Andy Becker. And then once approved, if we could get authorization to publish and get this on your agenda as soon as possible, I'd appreciate it. Would you be willing to authorize publication of the finalized draft?
And publication of the draft. So, I will second. Any further discussion? Merkin? Aye. Olson? Aye.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay.
Equals 10.
We can get it done. Rick was making fun of me the other day at the conservation board update. I said I could get it done in 30 minutes, but it went like 32. Well, good morning. The last time I was here again, Joe Quaker, Story County Conservation, Director of the Integrated Roadside Vegetation Management Program, along with Tyler Kelly, my wingman, who's moving snow right now. Well, yeah, we didn't even move the last event out of the shop, but just to get in the door, and so now we got to do a little more work. But it drifts in so much out. Last time I was in here was November, mid-November. The weather was a little different, and we were just putting away the hydro seeder, wrapping that up, and starting on drainage ditch work. And a lot of this is going to be the repeat board from the township trustee meeting, so I'll kind of go through that. But so we worked, and we had staff. We had some seasonal staff. I call them seasonal because they used to be called summer staff, but they work year-round now. So we had those. We had two, so there were four of us, and we were able to work in Warren 11, which is north of Nevada between Roland and McCallsburg. About 150 smaller trees, a mix of box elder and mulberry along this open ditch growing into it. We were able to finish that project just as the snow turned on us and actually get that done. And we have three pretty good sized piles of brush that aren't going to be in the way of any farming practices. We've talked to the farmer, so we're good to go until those brush piles cure, and then we'll burn those and slash haul some of those away next year. The other project we did was east of Hickory Grove Park. It was some brush over a tile that we worked on. We got that done as much as we could. It's kind of wet in there, so we could only do so much. We were hoping it would freeze to where we could get in there, but now the snow's too deep, and it's just not going to work out. But that's an ongoing project. So we were able to generate about $17,000 billed back to the drainage district folks. Once the weather breaks, we'll be able to burn some piles in another project called Hardened Story 3, and that will it make our 20, I think, that we had agreed on to our budget hearing. And with that, I do have some figures. During the budget hearing, it's not a hearing, just when we were talking, the budget workshop. We were talking about what what we've done. So we went back and looked, and actually, we've been doing a little work in the open ditches for 7 years, you know, kind of dabbling in it at first. If I go all the way back to 2011, 2,700 we built back. 2012, 13. 2014, 25. And then 21, and then 18. Last year was 14,000 build back. So, you know, it varies. So, and I think we gave you those numbers after that. And if you don't have them, I got it right here. We can email them to you. So it's good to keep track of what we actually build back. That's not what we actually received. So, and that's a long story, but it. Correct.
But until we go ahead and assess a new, put a new assessment on that district, that money isn't paid back to the county fund. So it's like they owe us.
Yeah. So anyway, that's kind of what happened up till the snow hit. We're doing maintenance, equipment maintenance, like a lot of other staff, getting ready for go time, which will happen. It's as simple sometimes as organizing the shop and getting ready. You know, a good organized nut and bolt center can really improve your summer activities when you break something and are scrounging around. So things that wouldn't normally get done are getting done. That's the positive of this weather, locking us in. And also with administrative duties, to put me in the office for so long, my pile has gone down to this. Oh, maybe like about this. It was up here. So, you know, we're getting some things done. Next week, Tyler and I are both in charge of continuing ed credits for the Iowa Association of Weed Commissioners. So we are teaching wise use of herbicide to a group, about 120 people in Ames. We don't do that every year, but about every other year they have other people come into IDALS or the Iowa State Extension, but this year it's us, and we will have a skit. A little bit of acting to go with that too, so that would be fun. we have some grants ready to go. little bit of more work on those. We have some information that will be submitted to us during this weed commissioner meeting next week about the grant process and how it changed. So we really can't dial in our grant until we kind of get the new skinny on what's going on. You know, they change it every year a little bit, so, but we're close. And those grants, again, were for the new spray, not only the truck, but the spray system and the sprayer, the GPS unit that goes with it. So those all help, hopefully. Those are just things we hope to get to make the process better. I did lay off our staff for a while. They're going to start back March 17th when the weather breaks. They're agreed to that. So that's kind of nice. They're willing to take some downtime. Those are our seasonal staff, not Tyler. Tyler's still gung-ho. And with that, I did report on the no spray permit. We're dialing that in. I do believe it has to go to the Conservation Board when we do our rules and regulate or policy update. And I assume it probably has to go to the Board of Supervisors too, but we're dialing that in. I did report that at the Township Trustee meeting. The no spray request, for those wondering, is a form that someone could come into the engineer's building at 837 N Avenue. That someone is a landowner in Story County who does not wish to have the right-of-way adjacent to their property sprayed with herbicide. So this is a permit process. They'll pay a small fee, then a larger fee, $25 for a set of signs. And we go through that permit process on how to place the signs. Call 811 so you don't hit a fiber optics line or gas line, where to put them, and what their responsibilities are to maintain their own right-of-way and the safety gear that goes with it when you're out working. And it's an annual permit that will have to come in, I believe it's April, to renew. I don't quote me on that. It's either March or April to renew that. And so far we have about 20 spots in Story County that people have requested us not to spray. This will make it official. We'll have a better tally of that, better mapping, things like that. So it's what a lot of what a lot of other counties do, especially in eastern Iowa. You have a more organic farming, things like that, a lot of more grape producers in the hillier country. So I'm glad to see we're doing that. Yeah, and you know, but one thing we need to make clear, I did have someone call up who just wanted the signs. They didn't own any property. They owned a little acreage with like half an acre house. So you actually, you know, physically have to own some property adjacent to the right of way. I mean, you could put it in front of your house. We get that part. But they were wanting to put it in other spots. But and again, Story County is not the only agency that applies herbicide in the right of way. You have utility people that don't always tell us they're around, and you have farmers that do their own too. So this will help. That should help with that. I think so. It's not finalized yet. It's not quite done, but we would hope it would be on the permit process like others. Yes. I'll keep you informed on that. Have you seen this calendar yet?
No.
Oh, cool. Mind if I get up? And so.
This is not court. You don't have to ask us to approach today.
That's today at 10:30. Okay. So you need to pay attention. The one page somewhere in here underneath one. Later for a small fee.
Yeah, all right, I'll remember that. I think that's a penny.
So this is a calendar funded through the Living Roadway Trust Fund. They do this every year. It has pictures of a lot of different counties. It has a couple of Story County, and it's kind of neat. And I have plenty of these. I know it's kind of late past the handing out calendar time, but there we have it. We did all the maintenance sheds and things have these and I at our shop and office. So I'm down to the last, just looking ahead, letting things melt, going to get ready for prescribed fire season, which will be a little up in the air because it's so wet. It's going to take a lot of drying to get things to get ready for fire. And I'm assuming that with all this meltdown, some of these projects, you know, we did 72 different projects with the hydro seeder last year. A lot of them were in the fall. A lot of these new culverts that Darren had on the township trustee presentation are going to probably need some touching up with all the water moving through them and the mulch. So I'm assuming that we're going to be hitting the road late March, getting some seed down again to get things to green up. So how'd I do?
You did.
Not bad.
All right. You might have gotten one.
Okay. Any questions? What am I planting? Well, in the spring, we'll probably put down some oats, depending on the weather, but oats can float up and wash off. A little seed that does a little better is annual rye. It can green up in about 5 days, 4 or 5 days, and we'll probably always throw some prairie in with it. Just, you know, keep adding. That's the benefit of having IRVM in your back pocket. We can keep going back and seed things. Where if there's a contractor, you know, once they seed something, it's hard to get them back. You know, their punch list is done. But we can keep going back and make things right.
I noticed there were a couple of fairly large claims last time to seed, and I didn't know if that was for the
dogs
or that was
for
the general.
I'm not sure. There was some seed purchased for Telk. I think Amy said she had a bunch of seed in her truck. If that's what we're talking about.
I'm interested, and this won't happen at least until your fall report, I think it was earliest, but I'm interested in just hearing about how many requests you get, again, from municipalities and to help come into their boundaries, into their borders, deal with your various nuisance, noxious weeds, et cetera. Because I know when I took the tour with you and Mike and Jim, the last spring, and we discussed all of the increased requests you're getting to provide services to the municipalities because they don't have their own plants to weed.
Yeah, true story. As things get annexed more, cities have a lot more property to maintain, and they're not really ready for that like we are. So that could be an opportunity that we could, thanks. I'll remember that.
Thank you. Great.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much.
You bet.
You never disappoint us. We've always got a show and tell.
Thanks.
So thank you. Hello, Margaret.
Good morning. No show and tell.
Yes.
But I'm excited because Joe promised that we're going to have spring mid-March, so
yeah.
The weather will break. Right?
Well, we'll do that. So what's going on with environmental health?
Okay, so PowerPoint, because I have no memory. I always have to slideshow from the beginning. Okay, so good morning. Today is February 26th, and the last time I gave my quarterly report was back in September. So I apologize for that, but it's things got in the way, and I just kept getting pushed back. So I'm Margaret James with Environmental Health. I'll start off talking about wells. For calendar year 2018, well permits, 12 of them, 7 water. Most of the water ones are for animal confinement. Most of the county is covered by rural water supply. Well pluggings, 22, 1 cistern, 2 rehabs, 193 samples, and 38 kind of transfer inspections. Our grants to counties program, we had a total award of $31,000. We have about $9,000 left, and that they're on the same fiscal year as us, the granted. Let's see, Laura wanted me to talk about this a little bit, time of transfer well inspections. So for about the last two decades, Story County has required through Chapter 61 that wells be inspected at the time of transfer. And it's an important service for buyers to know if they're getting a potable water source. And then it's also a really good way for our department to discover wells that need to be plugged or rehab, hence protecting the aquifer from surface contamination getting down into the aquifer. And then it was brought to our attention about a year ago, Iowa Code Chapter 331, the County Home Rule implementation, took that right away from us because it restricts the county or cities from collecting a fee or requiring anything at the time of transfer. So I talked to Ethan about this, and he recommends that we stop requiring the TOT well testing. And one thing that affects us is a loss of revenue of about $2,500 annually, and I've mentioned this to Lisa, and she has made note of that. We'll also lose a little bit with the spring realtor's busy time. It does not affect septic. It's a separate thing. That the septic is a statewide ordinance, whereas our well thing was a county only.
Thank you.
Very few counties actually require this, and a lot of them were trying to get their local boards to approve it, and they've been checking with us a lot to see how this plays out, and they're very disappointed to hear Ethan's response on this. So, yeah, too bad. So moving on, Iowa Well Survey, Story County participated in the State Hygienic Labs study. So this was no cost to us, just time. We only got four in this round. We got a lot, like 15 the last round. But this time they're looking at nitrate, E. coli, total coliform, arsenic, and manganese. Manganese is an odd one. That's more of a clothes staining, this and that. There's no MCL. I don't know why they're looking at that. Scary that they start looking at it because maybe they think there's a problem. I don't know. Arsenic, 0.01 is a maximum contamination limit. Story County has a few of these, but not bad. As far as some, it's like more the northern part of the state has arsenic problems compared to us. E. coli and total coliform, no problem. And then nitrate, really no problem either. Nitrate levels are high in surface water, groundwater, not so much because our average well depth is around 250, and it's well protected, the deep well. Okay, switching over to septic. This is one of our certified contractors, Todd White. And he is walking along the gravel part of a pressurized lateral system. So we have done, let's see, septic inspections. We've done 95 permits, so it's about keeping up with even with 2017 and above the previous years. Who knows what next year will bring. I had a phone call just this morning. and a guy's system is totally backing up. He purchased it from a bankruptcy, and they are exempt from the septic time of transfer inspections. And he was in total disbelief that they were exempt. And he was one of them that hooked to a drainage tile, and he's backing up on him now, and he's miserable about it. So we'll help him out. Well, what he'll have to do is keep pumping his tank. Basically, it'll be a holding tank until he gets a new system in March when the weather breaks, right? So it won't be March. It'll be May probably. One thing I will say with all the snow, a good thing is that it insulates the systems, and we have not had frozen systems like we did that one year a few years back. So no calls on frozen systems. Very good. Up by Roman. Yeah.
And
was to a tile, not to a ditch. So, yeah. So, and then that'll get disconnected. So, it'll take care of itself.
Okay.
I think. Yeah. But we can talk. Okay. So our program on pool tattoo and panning inspections for 2018. For pools, we have 47 facilities, which is misleading. That also includes like the spas, pools, slides, all this good stuff. 21 violations and 7 closures. Most of, I think all of the closures were based on water chemistry. Tattoo, 7 facilities, 10 violations, and they're more paper violations or nothing serious on those violations. Tanning, 22 facilities and 36 violations, again, not serious. This is... Yeah, the closures are if you have bad results like the pH or chlorine or this or that or bacteria call. And then the violations, a lot of them are, they have to check that water every day and the records are showing that it's not. The snapshot of when, like Matt is there, it passes and they don't get closed, but they do get written up for having poor records. Then there's also safety things like ladders or loose or this or that, you know. Matt does a good job catching those. Kathy does most of our, or all of our tattoo and tanning. She does a real good job of keeping on top of those. With very little support from the state Iowa Department of Public Health because they just don't have the funding. So they do the licensing and then just basically turn the whole program over to us. Okay, January was Radon Awareness Month. Kits are purchased from the Lung Association for $8, and we sell them at cost at our counter downstairs. Sometimes we'll bring them in the truck and drop them off when we're doing a well test or whatever. January was Free Kit Month, and 30 kits were handed out. Stephanie spearheaded that. Best time to test is the winter because your house is closed up a little bit. And we do talk to the contractors about radon-resistant housing for new construction. I'm hoping the schools are doing that. I've sent emails but don't get any responses back, but Ames going through all these new schools instructions. I hope they're doing the radon-resistant. And then just as a reminder, anything above 4 picocuries is considered unsafe. The average of Story County is 3 to 4, which is considered safe, but it's so spotty. It's amazing how one house will not have any, and then right next door they'll be super high, you know. And then to fix that problem, if you don't have the resistant construction, around 2,000 is what we're seeing. And then some highlights from my past quarter. I lengthened the quarter. So, I think you're all aware of this one, the Prather Practice Burn Infernal. That was in November. This one started off as a simple violation of them discharging untreated sewage to the neighbor. It was a little lake of it. It was really disgusting. And so instead of fixing that, they moved out, which in effect fixed that because there's no more wastewater coming. But then the house just went downhill from there. And so they figured, instead of fixing it and getting things squared away, they just burnt it down and maybe they'll move in a modular eventually. So, and this has been an ongoing project for years. So this was kind of a big deal for our department. And this is what it looks like now, and that is not what we need to see. We're starting to get complaints on this now. And then right next door to the east is another thing that looks just like that. They're relatives. And so come spring, we'll have to work with them to get it cleaned up. Yeah, well, they'd be trespassing, I guess. I don't know. Good question.
Mm-hmm. Signs don't do any good if it's someone out there at night or if it's kids sometimes.
consider this a public nuisance for that very reason, and that is what we will use to enforce him cleaning this up.
Okay.
It's hard when people don't have the means to get this done. So it's, you know, it's a process.
Sent him in letters already?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and calls. This one, Jerry and I, Planning Development Jerry, and I went out and did a joint inspection on this. It came in as a complaint to planning, so I just kind of went along. And I turned him into DNR, and DNR seems to think there's nothing much they can do. But, you know, seeing like this picture here, it seems to me they're environmentally they're not handling their property right. There's a lot of cars that they're storing there. They're not draining the engines. They're not taking off their mercury switches. They're just kind of, they have their batteries sitting out in the elements. So I sent them a, you know, BMP list. That's where we're at right now. He's been unavailable for a while. So just a FYI. And then, so now I'm going to, I'm sorry. Jerry would be the best one to ask on that. Yeah. I'm sure he's covered all the angles. Yeah. this was just a troubleshooting thing out in Cameron State. There's been some problems with systems out there. It's a very wet area during a very wet year last year. And, oh, we were out there a lot just trying to help them figure out what was going on. This one ended up being a leaking tank, and then it was just flooding the pressurized lateral. Another one, this is a mound that we were troubleshooting on. We're still working on that. It's kind of a legal issue because it was a time of transfer thing. A lot of my time in the past couple months have been working on CAFOs. We did the Longview Pork Master Matrix reviews on three of them in Richland Township, and then one was appealed unsuccessfully. Let's see, and what else I would say. I attended the class on manure at land application of manure, learned that. And then we have a new person on our Master Matrix review board, and that is Kathy Nenz, which is great. She has a lot of farming and livestock experience. It'll be great to have. Okay, so Crestview, we are passing the baton, environmental health, to Jerry. Thank you, Jerry. And because there are no longer health issues on this site. On the right, you can see it's pretty bare. So right now what I'm doing, I hop from CAFOs back into Crestview. So 9 inches stack of documents that I'm reviewing for Crestview in preparation for this talk that we're given to at the governor's conference. And Dr. Passion and Carla Webb is going to be giving the presentation. The three of us will give a joint presentation. Well, you have to just pay the buck, probably.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, like I think they have a 1 day and a 2 day option. Yeah. Okay. We might be able to record it and bring it back if you'd rather do that. We'll look into that. Okay. Septage land application. I'm still working with DNR on this. So they, because it was wet, they couldn't get in the field. This was last summer. Late summer, they dumped septage into the field, just dumped it. They backed in, and you can see all the tracks there. They dump back in, dump it, take off. And so he was reported, the neighbor reported it. And this is a big company. This is River to River is under the umbrella of the Boone ownership of Roto-Rooter. And we've done so far is they've had to license this truck, and then they had to put include this site on their license application. And then I've requested that Story County does the inspection of all land application sites in Story County. What we do now is if the office is in a county, that county is responsible for those. So now I'm going to be doing those. And then I'm also looking, asking them to look into how much they're saving, they've pumped, because there's a tax on it, $7 per 1,000 gallons, and they're paying $140, and small-time folks are paying thousands of dollars. So it's just very curious to me what's going on here. DNR, yes, out of Wallace office.
Thank you.
Yep. Complaints, solid waste, and vermin and colo, landlord-tenant, Deer Creek, burning trees, south of Cambridge. Landlord-tenant stuff, we get several of those. Trailer park, electrical problems, Story City, cows or cattle manure management, I called that one into DNR. Solid waste, Fernald, and that was what we already talked about. And then no septic in Fernald. That's a problem. That's a huge problem, that one.
That's a separate property owner.
Yeah. Committees and board activities. I was reelected to the Iowa On-Site Wastewater Association. I'm the treasurer. One important feature that we do is we track all of the certifications of the septic installers. So that's really important. And I was assigned to the Watershed Assessment Committee. Linda is on. And I'm still playing catch up. We've had our second meeting. Environmental health ordinance proposed changes. Okay, because of our budget and our workshop, y'all decided that it wouldn't be a good idea to get a probe, a soil probe. So instead of myself doing those, we're going to require an engineer or a soil scientist to do those soil evaluations. And that will happen as soon as we get the ordinance on the book, that they have to do it, and I'm not going to be doing it anymore. And the Board of Health did vote on that to require site evaluations for septic systems at the 2-5-19 meeting. So I'm in the process of writing up that ordinance, and then we'll start that process. The other thing we're changing up is for the well stuff, we are adding arsenic to the routine testing that is covered by the grants, the county's grant, and we are putting some language in there about frost pits, safety of frost pits, and then the time of transfer well inspections, will be removing that requirement.
Is there something else that we could do? Is instead of the transfer well inspections, is there some service we can provide to the buyer?
Yes, and I'm going to arrange to speak to the realtor group and just tell them that this is something that's really important for the buyer. We will come out there, inspect, and test the well for free. We would put that under the Grants to Counties program, and we would certainly encourage it. And then if we just happen to find wells to be plugged, they love it. So we'll encourage that for sure, yeah.
You can do it.
Oh, yeah. We can't require it. Yeah, so if we advertise it and push it, most people don't really worry about their wells anymore because it's their secondary water sources. You know, but we catch the cross connections that way too. You can't have cross connections between wells and a rural water system. Conceptual reviews. I just want to say that we participate in the reviews of these as they relate to septic and well and solid waste. Trainings and meetings, done a bajillion of these. This is since September. One interesting thing, just recently we went to the animal disease preparedness. Keith and I went to that. It was held in Ames there. Really excellent, scary stuff. I think our role would be figuring out where to bury the dead animals. That would be our biggest role. And thank you. Goats are smarter than they look. This was last summer, and I had to get through that fence, and I undid the lock, got in, did the lock again, and I went out and did my field work, came back through, and they're all looking at me from the other side of the fence. It took me hours. I had to call Madden to help me get those guys in. So it was so funny. They're really smart.
Other duties
was assigned. Herding goats. Yay. Thank you. Any questions? No? Okay.
Okay, so this is my quarterly report, the period covering October 2018 to December 2018. So for general assistance, we assisted 30 single household cases and 22 family cases for a total of 52 for the reporting period. Year to date, we have assisted 46 single households and 37 families for a total of 83. Notices of decisions where we've been unable to assist individuals and needed to refer them on to other options. We had 279 for the reporting period in year to date of 559. We had 25 individuals that applied that did not return for the quarter, and then 50 year to date that did not return. Primary types of assistance for rent, we paid $18,132.45. For utilities, provided $1,853.67. And the miscellaneous, the bulk of this is going to be for burial, $7,816 this quarter. We currently don't have anyone that we're assisting through SSI interim program for substance use services. During the reporting period, we paid on 2 claims, and year-to-date would be 5 claims paid on. For the Centralized Community Services region, we submitted our FY18 annual report to the Department of Human Services by December 1st. This is a report that I primarily hold the responsibility in writing and developing, and then it's approved through our administrative team and then through our governing board team. There is specific information that's required in the report, which includes services provided, data reports for individuals served, monies expended, and outcomes achieved. And that report can be found on the CICS website at www.cicsmhcs.org. Mary Greeley Medical Center, Crisis Stabilization Transitional Living Center, held their open house in October. They began accepting individuals for the transitional living services in October, and then started accepting individuals for the crisis stabilization services in December. They initially started out accepting just referrals from the Story County area for crisis stabilization, and that since opened up to the rest of the region. Staff from Story County shared CICS information with attendees at the Ames Schools Mental Health Fair in November. CICS also continues to be involved with the Children's Wellbeing Collaborative, and staff attended the stakeholder meeting that was held in October. CICS also partnered with NAMI Central Iowa to host a crisis intervention training, CIC training for law enforcement in November. 24 law enforcement personnel were trained from the CICS region. After a request for proposal process, the CICS Governing Board approved to award a contract for drop-in center services to Central Iowa Recovery, contingent upon CIR securing a location that meets the needs of the drop-in center services. For community services, we had 2 staff members participate in a statewide general assistance retreat in November. Staff participated in the Stepping Up Summit that was held in October. Staff attended the Safety Day training in October and also continue to participate in other county trainings when possible. Our office remains involved with the Opioid Task Force and the Nevada Substance Use Task Force, and the Opioid Task Force held a community conversation event in November. We continue to meet with local agencies working toward development of a homeless prevention centralized intake process. And this quarter, Aaron Rewert conducted 81 interviews with veterans who are surviving.
I do have one, and that's about meeting with the local agencies for the homeless prevention centralized intake process.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I and a few other Story County.
who are currently housed and are struggling to meet their rent and utility needs. And so it'd be coordinating that application process for those folks. So it could be for both rent or utilities through that coordinated central intake process.
And is that something that we might be dealing with the proposal for the hiring a person?
Yep,
Yep,
it is. Thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Good morning. So next time we have to, next time Conservation Department has to do any goat herding,
yes.
I think we're going to call Margaret.
I'm not good at it.
About some of the updates that I'd like to share some of the updates from the Conservation Department. First off is the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor. As you know, we've been working for the last several years on that. At the moment, we're doing the design work for phase three, and again, phase three is the trail connection from the park over to R38. And so We're working through design on that and working through easement acquisition with landowners along that route.
Can you recap about how that will
be funded? That portion is funded through the TIF funds that you have made available.
That we already have.
Yep.
Thank you.
You bet. We have set a grand opening date for the park, and that is June 28th. So if that isn't already on your calendar, appreciate you putting that there. That will be held at probably outside at the core facility building. They're near the core facility and the entrance. So we're still working through details on what that day involved, but we're looking forward to that. The trail connection, so phase three, obviously won't be complete by then, but the park itself will be. Speaking of trail work, the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail, you know that we have been working on paving that first section of it. And when I say first section, that's the section between R38 at Slater and Huxley. And specifically from R38 over to 535th Avenue, which is a gravel road. So that section is, we do have the funding complete for that. The section will go to bid in March. And so here in a couple weeks, we'll do bid opening on that. And hopefully we have a project that we can bring back for approval of the contract. We did recently meet, in fact, last week met with all the cities along the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail, and I think we had representation from all but one city, and discussed the plans moving forward with paving the trail, and all the cities were in agreement that with how we move forward with it. Generally speaking, we'll continue our work eastward from the west and do it segmentally. We have applied for some grants now to do this next phase, which would take it from Huxley to where the trail ends off, the paved portion of the trail ends off, I believe it's at 560th, and then we would take it all the way into Huxley to the Skunk River Bridge. So that's the next phase.
Given we are going to partner with Huxley
something I guess I need to chat with Darren about.
All right.
I haven't had that conversation. I don't know if there's any potential there or not. The trail is paved west of, it's paved to 560 from the west, and we go to the east from that juncture. So, there might be some potential there. And again, speaking of trails, the Prairie Rail Trail extension. Now, we are under contract now with that. PCI is the was the low bidder on that contract. We're trying to get a pre-construction meeting set up here within the next week, and then they will begin work whenever spring comes, I suppose, and then be done yet this summer. So I'll know more details after we get that pre-construction. I'm sorry, Linda, could you say? There is no, none of it is paved right now, no.
And this goes from Nathan West Highway 65, correct?
Yeah, so this contract will take it from Highway 65 to the east into downtown Zering. And then from there, users will, if someone wants to get to Dayton, they'll just utilize the street, most likely if they're on bicycles or sidewalk walking. Hickory Grove Beach House, you know that we have money funded in this year's budget to move forward with replacing the beach house. We are in design on that. We just received final design, and so we're moving that forward. I think next step is to go through planning and zoning, and then we'll bring a bid package forward to this board to consider releasing bids. Yeah, so that ridge, the ridge line that the parking lot's on, and it's basically at that's the height of land there. That this new building would be on that same level. Yeah, it'd just be a little closer to the parking lot than the existing. So it'll be easier for people to access. And, there'll be four essentially family showers, baths. Baths, I should say, bath restrooms, and then there'll be an exterior rinse station. So there'll be a exterior shower riser, you know, just for rinsing. And then there'll be a concession part of that building as well. The lake renovation, there hasn't been a lot of progress on this. You know, we are under contract for that. We don't know exactly when this contract is going to get started. I know that they are doing some internal review with their processes. So, i.e., they're looking at the best method for draining the remainder of the lake and working through some of those options with the DNR. There is work happening in the background, but nothing visible on site.
Well, what would be your estimate of how far we behind the original?
I wouldn't say we're behind our substantial completion date yet. I think we've built enough flexibility into it, one, because of weather, and two, to get the best bids possible. That I think we can still be on track with that spring opening, spring of 20 opening. Yep. Another project that is in design right now, and that is the Dakins, or the sustainable energy cabin at Dakins Lake. So we're moving through design right now, have had some really productive meetings with our consultants. consultant, and so we're looking forward to that. Again, we expect to be able to go to bid here maybe early summer, late spring, early summer on that project. Last time I reported on, I'll refer to them as riparian buffers or land protection buffers along rivers, that we acquired one through the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. I should say the Natural Heritage Foundation acquired one at the intersection of Riverside Road and Highway 69. It's adjacent to our existing Sleepy Hollow access area and across the highway from A to Hayden. I reported on that at the last meeting. And then the Natural Heritage Foundation has also just acquired one north of Story City that is adjacent to the Skunk River there as well. So that's in the neighborhood of 50 acres. It's predominantly tilled with the exception of a wooded border along the river and then a small section of CRP between the tilled section and the woodland. So that'll be a nice addition eventually when the idea is that would transfer over to the county as with the previous one I mentioned. And so those will be nice additions and we will be looking for funds in order to complete those acquisitions. So, much like the ones you've been familiar with, like Jordan Stanley Wildlife Area, Carroll Prairie, et cetera, much like those.
That's good. Continue to develop a good working relationship with people who are working with data and the Heritage Commission. Thank you.
Yes. Yep. You bet. And some salient dates. The summer camps are always just very busy for us. We always fill up our summer camps, and that registration starts coming up here the 13th of April. Event we started last year with our Trails Committee. We call it the Trailgate event, and this year we're hosting that, or we're coordinating that on April 14th. That'll be at McFarland and the McFarland Conservation Center. The focus on that will be celebrating water trails or water usage for recreation. And so and then speaking of Carroll Prairie, another salient date here for your calendars is April 22nd. That will be our grand opening for Carroll Prairie. And filling out some other dates in April, April 27th is our net team day. Team is acronym for Trail Enhancement and Maintenance. Days that we have volunteers come out and help us with our trail work. Another one to put on your calendar is June 8th. Now this is Get Outdoors Day, and we're changing the way we, this is a new event for us this year. We've always held a spring partners festival with our partners organization, and this year we're not doing that, and instead we're hosting this event, trying to highlight some different outdoor recreation opportunities at different areas. So we'll have several different parks in use then, highlighting different ways that people can get outside and engage with nature. So that is it. Any questions? Prairie Seed at Health?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're putting in, we've always said that that's such a high visibility place. We want to use a pollinator type mix. We want to use a really high diversity mix. And so there'll be, we've done a couple of things. In keeping with the theory of in a learning corridor, we've done a couple things different there. We are doing a high diverse mix, so lots of forbs, lots of flowers in the mixes. And we're also testing some different ways of prairie establishment. There will be some areas there that we've seeded grass heavy initially, and some areas where we have gone in and added a standard kind of ratio of grasses and forbs in an effort to see how we can get it established best. Sometimes we get unwanteds that come in, like clover, and there are several others that species that come in, and then we have to treat unwanted forbs. Our theory is that, well, if we hold off on planting the native forbs until we have the unwanteds under control, I wonder if that may be beneficial. So we're testing that. But in essence, it's again, a high diverse, heavy forb prairie, and we did receive a grant for that. If this was the genesis of your earlier question, we did receive a grant from for a pollinator program, so we got $9,000 worth of seeding paid for in that grant.
That is pretty expensive.
It is very expensive.
Good morning. Dustin Ingram, 304 Main Street with AEDC over in Ames. So I was browsing the internet recently looking for information on Roland, Iowa for a project there, and I came across homesnacks.com, which ranked four communities, small communities in Iowa, in Story County, at least in Iowa, in the top, among the top 20 communities of all of Iowa. And so I thought that was great news. Just a little bit about the reputation of the website. They've been featured on CBS News, ABC, and NBC. So they do have a little bit of a reputation there. Metrics they looked at were population density, income, housing, unemployment, traditional metrics you would look at for rankings. But the four communities that placed within the top 20 that are in Story County are Gilbert, Roland, Story City, and Slater. For places to live, looking at small communities. So I believe the population threshold was under 5,000. So anyway, just great news that four communities within Story County placed overall in the top 20 in Iowa.
And this was a nationwide?
Just the state of Iowa.
Iowa.
Yeah, I think they looked at 210 communities were in the running for that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you for
excellent news.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
For